Welcome back to Don't Call It a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
Today we're done with Whispers of the Storm. Whispers are getting louder, Dan. There they are.
By ZB Steel.
I think today I think we're just gonna jump into it.
Yeah.
Right?
No warm up today. Look, I want to get us started with a little thing. Because we're gonna build into this. Just like developing our shattering abilities, we gotta start small. Okay?
Okay, yes, of course.
So Redlin, did you pick up on what his favorite genre of book is, Luke?
Fantasy.
What the fuck is a fantasy book in this world? Have you thought about that?
This is a good question.
What is that? What is a fantasy book here? And what makes it have that distinction? Do they have computers?
Yeah, because they can't. Well, would they have? Would science fiction be a separate thing? I don't know. Well, okay. I'll say this, Dan. We haven't seen. Well, have we seen like mythical creatures? I feel like no.
Not really. But like, is that the bar? Is it that there's just like orcs and shit?
Yeah.
So then what was this? What was the genre of this book for us, Luke?
Well, okay, hang on. This was a fantasy book from our perspective.
Right, but there were no orcs or elves or anything.
Yeah, but there's magic. Dan.
Uh-huh, okay. And sword fighting.
So some sword fighting, a little sword and sorcery situation.
Yeah.
But from Redlin's perspective, fantasy cannot just mean magic.
Or sword fighting or quests.
Because that would just be like a novel.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah.
It's a good question. Dragons. Dan.
Just dragons, huh?
Just dragons all the way.
You know what? Fair. I say fine.
I don't know what it could be. The only thing, like, because it has to be something that we consider fantasy that is not in this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the only thing I can think of are, like, yeah, orcs and dragons and stuff like that.
Right. It's got everything else in it.
Yeah. Or fantasy is just completely different.
Yeah.
Because like their fantasy, yeah, I don't know. This is funny because when that line came up, I kind of brushed past it, but my brain was like, something's weird about this. And I'm glad that you've clocked it.
Right. Right. And because there's one thing, it's one thing to be like into fairy tale. Like fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
Is a thing that I think you could get away with here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But fantasy, what's going on in those books, Redlin?
Yeah, I'm curious too.
Because it's different than an adventure book, right? This isn't like Around the World in 80 Days or like 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea, that kind of stuff.
Right.
This is a fantasy book.
Right, so it has to be basically just like something that they don't have in their world.
Maybe the magic is just way doper, you know?
Mm.
Like yes. It's okay. The same kind of thing, but it's just amped way up.
Sure. Yes.
So like everybody's doing magic.
It's like how we have amazing technology that would look like magic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To another person. So like they their like shattering thing is kind of just baseline stuff.
Oh.
And so they don't even necessarily consider it magic.
Okay, yes. This is exactly, I think we've just cracked it, right? Because what is science fiction for us? Science fiction for us is taking our existing technology and really amping it up to the next level and being like, ooh, what could happen if things were a little bit different? That's gotta be what they're doing here with their fantasy, right? Their fantasy is like, okay, take all this magic sword fighting shit and we're amping it up to like, he's reading the Cradle series is what he's doing.
Yeah. Cradle series or just like different magic, right? Like I do agree that it has to be like bigger.
Yeah.
But it can't also be just different. Like give me some wands. They've got wands in their fantasy for sure.
Is that good? Do we like that? I think wands are out these days.
Wands are out these days, that's true. But yeah, it's just crazy magic. Much more amped up than this one.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a little like it's like Alice in Wonderland sort of stuff.
Sure. Okay. I have another. I have, let's do a couple small ones.
Yeah,
actually, because I have a couple. Do you keep forgetting that they have burning lavender just constantly falling?
Oh, Luke, it's sage, isn't it?
It's sage. You're right. It's sage.
Yeah.
It's sage.
I do keep forgetting that. Yeah. Yeah.
That's wild. Like, I realized that we should have done this note in the first book.
Yep.
Air quality, terrible.
This is what I was thinking of the whole time. Yes. The smog, the constant smog.
Yeah. Okay. I do think the aesthetics are cool, which I think the he makes a big point of at the beginning.
Yes.
Of you kind of like always have these embers falling down.
But also,
do you think it works?
Huge fire risk.
Do you think it smells good? Huge fire risk.
First of all. Second of all, do I think it smells good? I mean, they say it smells good in certain parts of the city.
Right. So, but it is, it's like you're not getting rid of the bad smell. You're just like mixing in sage.
Yes, this is true. But like a lot of people, like I feel like that's a classic old timey strategy.
Yeah.
Is like you get a little potpourri or perfume or whatever to cover up your stank that you got going on.
Right.
So
we're pro.
We are pro, but as I was reading about this, the scale of just the amount of sage that they're burning.
Yeah.
This plant has got to be close to extinction by this point, right?
Well, it's either that or just like it's industrial.
There's got to be so much land dedicated to sage production.
Yeah.
Thinking about, because Luke, you have to think about the fact that this stuff is being burned constantly in a large enough quantity that you can smell it from the ground, like it's being burned in a tower. So not only do you have to smell it from the ground level, you have to be able to smell it around the city, like a reasonable distance from the tower. Luke, we haven't even talked about the exponential scaling of area as you go further away from a tower. This is R squared.
Right.
So like for smell to travel, to cover area, it's a lot. There's a lot of scent molecules that have to be released and maintained in an area to be able to smell it at any distance away from this tower. The other thing is, Luke, you're going to grow accustomed to it over time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So those times where you actually notice it, it's particularly pungent.
Right.
That's so much sage we're burning. The other thing about this, Luke, is you have to like dry it. So the volume of material that you have to produce is massive because you have to then dry out these leaves, ship them in to the capital, burn them every day.
Yeah. You've got a guy up top kind of like lighting a few and throwing them. I think is my understanding.
A real Snoop Dogg kind of guy.
right
yeah
yeah It's a real expense. It's a real project.
Honestly, I feel like it's most of what the administration of this empire revolves around.
Yeah.
It's like, how do we get the Sage production, drying, shipping in enough sync with our capital that we never run out?
Yeah.
Because, Luke, they could have. I want to say, you know what? I actually appreciate their moxie here. Because what they could have done is they could have created a culture where rich people carried around a bundle of sage with them at all times, right?
Yeah.
There you don't have to worry about making the whole city smell like sage. You just need your local area. And that's much less sage you got to be carrying around.
Sure.
Instead, they were like, fuck that. We are burning probably tons of sage every week to make the whole city smell like it. For the aura.
I mean, I feel like it's a big marketing thing.
Yeah. Big tourism draw. Yes. Yes.
So maybe it's, I mean, I'm sure it's not making up for itself.
No, there's no way.
In tourism. But it's offset a little bit by it being an interest, like, because your method is less interesting, right? And I feel like the Archon is the one that has decided that this is how they're going to do it.
Right.
And he's going for spectacle.
Right. Right. Do you think that also makes up, like, how much of the cost is incorporated as also, like, asthma treatment for, like, 10% of their population?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's bad.
It's not good.
They haven't done that.
that study yet?
That LCA, though. The life cycle assessment on that.
Wait a minute, Luke.
That, yeah.
Also, I just realized, think of all of the people they need to hire to constantly be sweeping up the ashes collecting in the city.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the material doesn't disappear. It turns into a fine dust that settles on everything.
Right.
It's honestly, it's reminding me a little of, like, the creme from the Stormlight Archives. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. The creme being the, like, there's a little bit of, like, mud in the rain, basically.
Yes, exactly. And it sort of starts to cover everything over time. But this one is, like, self-imposed ash that is constantly raining down on this city.
Yeah.
Man. Big expense. But they spare no expense, to quote our last book.
Of course. So I had to come back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are we going in on Redlin yet?
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. So I think, listener, the rest of the episode is probably going to be us going in on Redlin.
Yeah.
Because we have to. And I'm going to start little. I'm going to start little with Redlin. Okay.
Okay, good. We'll build up.
Redlin does so much edging of the future in his recollection.
Wait, what do you mean by edging of the future?
He is edging us to this crazy future that he is a part of. What I mean is, he's like, he introduces a character and then we'll be like, huh, and we all know what happened with that guy. Ugh.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Crazy fate that guy encountered. But anyway, let me tell you what it was like when I first met him.
Right.
He's doing this constantly.
He is. We haven't read it.
No.
But we should acknowledge that there is a I think it's like a novella that this author put out that was published before this. So there's a chance. I don't know. Maybe some of these characters are in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of like you have to read that to get a lot of these.
Yeah. I mean, I get the sense that it's not in there. I get the sense that it is meant for us and for the sort of, like, it's sort of to sound badass, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is kind of what everything he does is for.
Right. Correct. He wants to sound really cool in front of the Inquisitor.
Yeah.
And yeah, one of the ways he does that is just constantly being like, oh, you'll never imagine what this guy came to, but let me just tell you what he was like at first.
It's cool. It's mysterious.
Yep.
He's like there at the beginning of everything. Right?
It seems like it, yeah. It seems like there's literally no one that does anything consequential that he didn't get involved with.
Right.
All right, buddy.
He's just an important guy, Dan. You wouldn't really understand.
One of the most important. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's frame this a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Because like you said, a lot of this, the rest of this episode is going to be us going off on Redlin.
Yeah.
And I do want to frame it as Redlin is presented as, for one thing, he's telling this story.
Yes.
And as we've discussed, we're assuming pretty unreliable narrator.
Yes, definitely.
And also, he is like a villain.
Yes.
There's like times within this which he kind of tries to make himself seem wise and have like kind of learned lessons or like a villain who is like misunderstood and that kind of thing.
Yes.
However, he is presented as like he's just this evil guy.
Yeah. That's right. How we are encountering him. Yeah. In the sort of narrative outside of his story, we are encountering him as like this notorious villain, this like horrible guy. Yeah.
Right. And so a lot of the complaints I think that we're going to have on him are going to be framed by that.
Yes. And I also think there's two things that I think I want to say for this as well before we really get into him. The first is I think it also contextualizes some of the times where he did something that was evil and he knew it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's another way to understand those stories, because when you like... The one that I think of a lot is the Gare one, where he seemingly had no reason for throwing Gare under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I think one explanation here is that the real reason was either way worse, and he's trying to figure out any kind of way to pitch this story so he doesn't look as bad.
Mm-hmm.
Or he really didn't have a reason, and... he's actually like performing in these times where he seems noble. He's like pretending to be a lot nobler than he actually is to garner sympathy from us, right? Like, he actually is a psychopath who has no reason for harming other people. He just does it for fun, but he's trying to pitch himself as like a complicated character. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think there's a couple of ways that this fits to some of the weird story points with what he's telling. I think there's one other thing that I want to say with Redlin, and that is that in my life, I have encountered at least two old men who are like Redlin in the way that they seemingly find themselves in the middle of extremely important and consequential events, and they want to tell me about it. And I don't know if they're making shit up or not. It often sounds they are. And I'm just like not nodding my head as they're talking about like being a groupie for Pink Floyd or like single-handedly building the park in my neighborhood because they've lived here for 50 years or whatever. Like, some of these things might be true, but they are somehow at the center of every single consequential thing they can look at or hear about. And these are real people that I know. So I'm like, I see a through line there with Redlin as like being this kind of a guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, similarly to that, I have known a few people that will like tell me stories that they think makes them look good.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not say my actual opinions, but a lot of time I'm like, you are not the cool person in this story.
Right. Right.
Right. So I've had that experience too, which I think is kind of similar to the point that you're making it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is very relevant for how Redlin tells his story.
Yep.
Okay, that's broad strokes.
Yeah, we need to start getting more into it now.
Yeah. So one that I want to talk about is they get reinstated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's this thing where because of the way that their like previous mission went in the last section that we read, they get like kind of taken off active missions.
Yeah.
Which I have some qualms with, like, the leadership style.
Correct.
Of the Vanguard. But setting that aside, they have this thing, and then they get like reinstated in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like got in a fight or something. Anyway, Redlin puts himself in this leadership position.
Yep.
In a way that drives me nuts.
100% agree.
Where he like has decided that he's going to be the trainer for these other, like, I think it's two other people.
That, yes. Redlin suddenly like coming up with lesson plans for these two.
But his lesson plans are he's like, do this thing and then I'll let you go get lunch. It's like, dude, you are like my peer.
Yep. Yep. I hate it. If I'm one of these two people that he's like teaching how to do this, I'm fucking pissed.
I like literally the moment he goes like, do this thing and then I'll let you go get lunch, I'm like, I fuck you, dude.
Yeah, dude. Especially Luke, and you know, I'm a teacher, right? Just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you have any idea how to teach someone how to do that thing. Especially with Redlin, where it seems to come from an intuitive sense. Like, he was able to do it intuitively.
Yeah.
And the only reason he was able to do it, like, better and understand some concepts is he talked to the actual teacher.
Yeah.
That's the teacher. What are we doing? Is he too busy?
I mean, okay, I do think there's a thing here where, like, They're like not allowed to be in lessons or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Am I remembering that correctly?
I don't.
There is some reason why like they weren't getting taught by this guy, I think.
But like Redlin was, right?
Yeah, I don't. It's kind of a jumble in my mind.
Yeah.
But,
the other thing about it, which is really, like, I don't understand. I get that Redlin is taking on this sort of leadership role.
Yeah.
But like, where is the moment where he's like, oh, I should also take on the teaching role with these young people. And the way I'm going to do it is like I'm going to give them a frustrating task to do.
Right.
Like this was never modeled for him anywhere. This is, I think, he's trying to show that he is like a good teacher, I think, because the end outcome is that they figure out how to do it.
Right.
But his starting strategy is just like, hey, do an impossible thing because I think this will help you figure it out.
Right.
That's why? Where did you learn that as a technique for teaching?
It just came to him, Dan. Just like shattering comes to him naturally. He's a born teacher. Which right. is and it works great. He even says, I didn't actually write down the exact quote, but this is kind of his inner monologue.
Yeah.
He like says that he thinks even Gare would have thanked him.
Yes.
For like sparing him from this fate that they're in.
Yep.
And the fate is like to be a Vanguard or something. And it's like, I don't think so. You exiled Gare.
Yeah, for this no is. Reason. Yeah.
Garrett. I don't think you can like let yourself off the hook by being like, we, the vanguards are kind of not as glamorous as I thought. So like, actually my thing with Gare is okay.
We just get like a ton of authority and learn how to use magic and get to go to cool parties. And
right.
That's all. But we also have to like do chores and shit. Yeah. Redlin, you're not a good guy, but
no,
you didn't do anything good. The other thing about it, which I find so frustrating as a teacher, just the last thing about this Redlin as a teacher thing, is he talks about mm-hmm. how he could never be a teacher as he's going through this process because he doesn't have the patience. Sort of putting the failures of his students directly on their shoulders. Like, oh, yeah, they just can't figure it out.
Right.
Buddy, you're not doing a good job. Like, sure, patience is a part of it, but also, like, thoughtful lesson plan is a part of it as well.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be nearly as patient if you design a good lesson. But it's just convenient to say you're being really patient because you're just blaming them for not getting the thing that you're telling them to do.
Right. Yeah. It's like, man, I have to put up with so much.
Yeah, exactly.
These dummies just don't get it.
They can't even levitate a rock with no instruction. Right. Yeah.
Oh, man. He's great at it, though.
Yeah, he's really good at it. Can I move us a little bit to when they make these contracts?
Yes. The negotiation kind of thing with the gods.
Yes. There's a lot here.
I have a note on this.
There's a lot here we need to talk about.
Yeah.
The first one, it's a question I have for you, Luke. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to give them your soul?
Okay. Yes, this is my note as well.
So
I don't know
the stakes here. Yeah, the stakes of what they're bartering are like their eternal soul.
Yeah.
If
well,
what is a tenth of
that? They say soul.
That's true. I guess maybe it.
And also, what does
eternal.
That mean?
What does it mean? What is a tenth versus a half versus a whole? How does that directly impact you? I feel like we needed to sit in on some more religion classes with Redlin to be like, now everyone has a soul. We can scientifically prove it. And your soul will pass on to the afterlife only if you have more than 50% remaining.
Right, right. Yeah, like there's... I can make a bunch of guesses as to what giving a fraction of your soul to the god means.
Yep.
But none of them would be good because like, what does that mean?
And how do we balance how much of a soul is worth like some power? Like when Redlin says a tenth, is that a lot? We've heard no other bargaining of souls in this book, right? We've got no baseline for what a lot is for an amount of soul to give up.
Right.
Maybe now I've got two theories actually for this. My first theory, Luke, is that a tenth is actually a lot. And the god knows, this goddess knows how much a soul is worth and is like starting high. She's highballing him so high, which is why she doesn't continue to negotiate when he says a tenth, because she's like, holy shit, I got a tenth? He's giving me a tenth of his soul? You guys, we're partying after this. This is big bonuses right. for everybody.
I honestly am curious if souls are even like splittable. Because like, okay, so like when this happens, I like... This felt like almost a joke to me.
Yeah.
Like that he was making a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, I mean, I'm repeating myself here, but like, I don't know what that means in terms of like splitting your soul.
Yep.
And I thought he was like just saying a number.
Yeah.
It's like, ha ha ha, whatever. Okay. Let's get on to what actually we're negotiating over. Right. But like, I feel like it makes sense for Samira is the god's name.
Yep.
To be like, give me your soul. And he's like, I'll only give you this fraction of it. And she's like, I know more about this than you do. And that's giving me your soul, so deal.
Right. Right. The other thing, which it could be, Luke, my other theory about this whole transaction is that the god, like, Samira doesn't care that much. And
yeah,
like, she would have taken any number. And my theory actually ties into Redland's girlfriend, Mika, I think is her name.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an important characteristic of Samira that we encounter. And that characteristic, do you remember when we first are introduced to Samira? She's got golden eyes, right?
Mm, yeah.
You know who else has golden eyes, Luke?
I forgot about this. Okay. Mika.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember one of the first times we meet Mika, Redland is like sort of almost pushed off of the battlements by a sudden breeze. Here's the theory, Luke. Mika made a contract with Samira.
Okay.
Gave up her whole soul. She's pissed. She's pissed. She hears that our boy Redland only have to give up a tenth, and she's like, ah, fuck. That's why they leave in a huff when they hear he can do wind magic.
Yeah.
Because she's over here with her whole soul given up. She's got golden eyes and Samira making her do whatever she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And Redland's over here like, yeah, I only have to do whatever she wants a tenth of the time. And I'm a herald now. So, pretty cool.
Okay. I hear you. I forgot about that eye connection. So that's good.
Yeah, so she's pissed at Redland.
She's pissed at Redland. That's fair.
Because he got a good deal. Honest. Well.
He got a good deal. He got to be a herald, like you said. Which, again, I don't know what that means either.
Well, Luke, it does have interesting implications for his job, though. Because you remember what one of the roles of a vanguard is?
I mean, there's a... Well, which one are you referencing?
So vanguards have two roles, right? One of them is a hunter, which we've seen. The other one is a guardian. And the specific category of people that they're guarding, heralds.
Right. One of the categories.
One of the categories. So, Luke, we get in this situation where Redland could be walking around being like, all right, hey, vanguard buddies, you need to come guard me now because I am a herald.
Right.
And they're like, dude, come on. Like, quit it.
It's kind of against the spirit of the thing.
Right.
Okay. Sure. But like, it feels like he's just negotiating for things that he doesn't know what they are.
But he's so confident, Luke.
Where he's like, more is better. And like, herald is more power.
Yeah.
Right. But like, a lot of times things mean like things are not just magnitude, mm-hmm. right? Like they have specific constraints or, and so like he gets a like more efficient use of wind magic by being a herald.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
But that can't be all it is, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's duties that come along with it, I assume.
Yeah, he hasn't read the fine print of that contract just yet.
Right.
Especially...
Like, he gave up a tenth of his soul to be a herald.
Yeah.
But, like... Yeah, that's like a job title.
Right. He's going to have to go to one of these weird, fucked up slave schools and be the guy behind the table, like Alessandra.
Yeah.
He just didn't read the fine print, so he doesn't know when the god comes to him in his sleep and is like, okay, are you ready to go to your school? He's going to be like, right. What are you talking about? I got to go, I don't know, find Mika again.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Okay. All right, where do you want to go next?
I mean, I've got kind of a serious thing next. I don't know if we want to go there.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't know if we want to go
there. That's my next one too.
Okay. So we have to talk about the hand job scene.
Yes.
We need to preface this here. Okay. First, sexual assault, very bad. Sexual assault of men, often not talked about, of men by women.
Yeah.
Often not talked about. It happens. It's often a joke. It's not funny.
Right.
It's serious stuff.
Very serious stuff, yes. Okay. And we're going to talk about this as two men who, not speaking for you, but have not experienced this.
Neither have, yes. I have not experienced this either. So we can approach this as two men, two straight men, but not anybody who's like experienced something like this. That being said, we do need to talk about it.
Yeah. Right. Like the typical things that like, because in this kind of scenario,
yeah,
even if you don't like, I'm sympathetic to the idea that like, he never like said no. Right.
Correct.
And like, even that's not to discount.
Right.
Like, if you don't say no, you can still not consent.
Right. He never gave affirmative consent, which is a big problem for sure. But yes. But there's also, yes, I will say, a lot of sexual encounters happen without two people giving explicit, like, verbal consent. But there's still a consensual encounter between, yeah, two people.
But then also the other thing is, like, a lot of the times when there's, when you say, like, someone was pressured into something like this.
Yes.
Like, those pressures are not present in this story.
Now, I do think that there is a little bit of this, which is where I think maybe, again, we're missing a little bit more context. Like, maybe if Redlin had told this story emphasizing how the nobles, like, actually do have a lot of power over vanguards, like, how there was sort of a coercive nature to this, that would feel a little different. Because, like, I think normally how this kind of thing happens in our world for this kind of a dynamic is like a boss and a subordinate. And it would be like, yeah, I'm going to fire you.
Like someone in a position of power over you.
Exactly. And I think what makes it weird for me is it doesn't feel as much that this person has a, like Lady Olivier, I think, or Olivia. She Olivia, doesn't yeah. feel like she has that power over him. At least it's,
yes,
it's not communicated to, it wasn't communicated to me why he felt so coerced to do this, like where the power was coming from,
yeah,
to say no or to like kind of turn her aside firmly. Which,
well, because he also like, yeah, they're like bantering.
Yes.
Throughout this whole night.
Yes.
In ways that they're kind of like they like talk shit to this one of the guy.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They have like an antagonistic relationship with one of the nobles. And then they're kind of like flirting in a like teasing way with the other two.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that they're like actively antagonistic to the guy noble makes me think that they like the nobles don't actually have that much power over them.
Now, we should say that the guy noble, I think, is sort of characterized as not actually as high status as the other two. Like, they put his title in quotations. Sure. But sure. It's still, the vanguards seem very high status. Like, if we're thinking about this society, vanguards have a badge that lets them go wherever they want, requisition resources. They make up, like, one of the three largest or like most important political factions in this realm. They are like very physically powerful, martially capable. Like they know magic. It seems like Redlin has a lot of opportunity for rejecting this advance.
Right. He's also not like physically constrained really.
No, I mean, he mentions that he's like frozen in panic. And he also mentions in his story that he thinks that she interprets this as panic. Like from his perspective, he thinks she knows he's not consenting to it and likes it. He thinks she is doing this intentionally, knowing he's not consenting. But I don't get a really strong sense that she never says anything that's like, oh yeah, you're gonna do this even though you don't want to.
Right.
Like the things that she is saying seem to indicate that she thinks he's into it. Like,
yeah.
So yeah. This is a tough scene, Luke. This is a tough scene.
It is tough. I didn't know that he had considered it sexual assault until like the end of the chapter.
Yeah.
And then he said, he like says he's like something about like, this is how it always is for victims or something like that.
I think he used the word survivors.
I think it's the word he used.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? I like audibly gasped. And I was like, wait, what?
Right.
And then I like went back to reread it because I was like, oh, I was thinking that you just like had a moment of weakness or something.
Right.
And like accepted this sexual act. And like I went back and reread it and I was like, yeah, like I guess I can tell that he didn't want this. It's just like,
I appreciated that this is in this book because I think this is, as we mentioned at the outset, this is important as like a story to tell. Like this story of a man being sexually assaulted and it not being a joke and it being like taken seriously and having a profound impact on him is an important story. And I think I was disappointed in his telling of this particular version of that story, of Redland's like explanation for why this was assault. Like I want to be on his team here, but I just like, it feels like so complicated.
And his telling of it just leaves it, like it's an important discussion. It raises question, like it raises like awareness and stuff like that.
It's interesting too because the Lady Olivia was drunk as well. Like,
right.
I feel like there's a lot of dynamics here that like normally it's the other way, right? Like Redland wasn't drunk and then was taken advantage of. Lady Olivia was drunk, and like that certainly played a part in it. And so, yeah, it's just very, it feels very complicated here. And in the telling, I think, is missing some important components.
Okay. Serious topic. Done, I think. he makes it, like, it becomes, like, very important, like, character wise
yes,
for kind of the rest of the book also.
Yes
So yeah, and he a lot of times like it gives, he's like, I never want to be like helpless like that again.
Yes Totally. Like it's sort of the inciting event to the confrontation in the tribunal that happens, like, without this event, he and, is it Rohan, that get into the fight? Like they don't get into a fight during the tribunal, which then leads to like all kinds of other stuff going on.
That one also is like, is more evidence to me that Lady Olivia didn't really see it as like, saw it as consensual.
I think it could go both ways there. Like, I think you're right. She probably did. Although this is also a component of like sexual assault stories that's important, is that often like the person doing the assault either refuses to see the signs that it's not consensual or like thinks that it is consensual in some twisted way. And so like, there's definitely that as a, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean what happened wasn't like sexual assault just because she thinks it was consensual. But I think also there's a component to her telling the story that makes it sound like she's trying to like, kind of like needle at him with it. Like she's trying to, she's kind of mocking him with the story. Like the way she tells it makes him seem like kind of a young boy.
Well, she's just like kind of trying to stir up drama or something.
It does seem that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and okay, Luke, and this is also important because this comes from Rohan, right? Rohan mentions this to Redlin. Yeah. And I feel like if the power dynamic was super obvious, I feel like Rohan would hear this story and go to Redlin and be like, are you okay? Like,
yeah,
I heard this happened and she's now spreading it to everybody. Like, are you all right? Like, was this, were you guys doing that? And like, were you guys consenting to this? Or like, was she taking advantage of you, bro?
Right.
And that's not how he comes at Redlin with it. He's like, hey, I heard you had a thing with Lady Olivia.
Right. He comes at it as like you had an inappropriate relationship on a job kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Which also,
I don't know.
Which is also crazy, Luke, because inappropriate thing on a job, we already saw like a senior Vanguard member say, like, discussing with Redlin about how she would fuck anybody to do the right thing.
Right. Yeah.
So like, it's not inappropriate for a Vanguard.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. That one's like, it's like fooling around while you're supposed to be protecting, like on guard duty, kind of, I feel like is a little bit different, is like fairly irresponsible. Or again, that's not what Redlin does, but like, correct, that's how Rohan views it.
Correct. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Sure.
Anyway, that's kind of besides the point, but okay. Are we ready to move on?
Yeah, let's move on.
So the rest of my notes kind of revolve around one theme.
Mm-hmm.
And that theme is that the Vanguards are like really bad at their jobs.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a couple reasons I say that.
Mm-hmm.
First off, it's a little bit hard for me to tell how much time is passing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it feels very short.
Mm-hmm.
But they keep acting like they've received all this training and they're like getting more and more experience and they're like professionals.
Yeah.
Whereas like from a reading experience feels like they're still like 16 or 17 years old.
I'm curious, Luke, how long do you think they've been in the city training as Vanguards?
It feels to me like a few months.
I put 6 months as the max for how long they've been there.
That's how it feels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
I will say, I think that a lot of them would agree with you, considering how many portraits of dead Vanguards are in the sort of like gathering area, and they don't live for very long.
Right. So they keep putting Redlin and these people that have received very little training, in my perspective, on these missions that are like very dangerous and like require professionalism.
Yep.
And they keep performing incredibly poorly. So like the first example is they have to go track down this Reaper.
Yeah, the first Reaper that they go find.
The first one.
Yep.
And Redlin is kind of in charge, as he always makes himself.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan.
Yeah.
And the strategy. So bad.
Yeah, doesn't work so out bad. At all.
They're like, okay, we know. Like, okay, if you go in and you're a group of brand new, basically, people with like fairly limited experience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because they say this where they're like, Reapers are very hard to fight because they think that they can just like go get more magic, whereas you're limited. So they can just like blast out their magic.
Yep.
And so you have to like be very careful. Their plan is they just like go up and attack the tent.
Yeah, yeah, but they don't think he knows that they are there.
Right.
So it's called a sneak attack, Luke. Works every time.
But like, do more than that. You know what I mean? Like,
no, I mean, especially considering the fact, Luke, that reaping is a notorious act.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knows if you do this, people are coming for you.
Right.
How do you think you're sneaking up on a guy who's reaping?
They go up to this like lake, and it's like there's just a tent.
Yeah.
Out in the open.
Yep.
And they just like come up on it, and they're like, all right.
All right, nice. He's got to be in there. Let's kill him. Wow, this is an easy one.
And they just go in, and he's just like... I realized that... I forget his name, but the...
Aaron.
Just like... I realized that he kind of goes rogue to some degree, but not that much. He just like stabs the tent a bunch of times, yeah, hoping to get him.
But their plan wouldn't have worked anyway. Because their plan was to look and see if he was in there, and then kill him.
Right.
He already saw them. He was already watching them when they started the plan. Like, oh, God.
There needs to be, like, this is a life or death thing where you guys are kind of the underdogs.
Oh, for sure.
And so you need to go in with, like, a strategy.
A good one, we should say.
Like, yes, preferably a good strategy, but even just one at all.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you need to have defensive capabilities,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Plans for when things go wrong, plans to meet up if you guys have to scatter or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Luke, it is bad. You're right. Also, is it just me or could a lot of these folks use a shield?
Yes. This is what I was thinking of when I said like defensive abilities.
Yeah. Like, look, I get it. You can use magic to make a shield, but if you have just like a wooden or a metal shield, they've got to spend a lot more magic to blast through that thing.
Right.
Bring one, maybe. I don't know.
It's a good thought.
Yeah, so they send a bunch of new recruits there. Part of it is because I guess they just want them to die? I don't know. And they succeed with one casualty. Is it one? Does anybody die in that
one? Their teammate like freezes and then kind of decides it's not for her, so she runs off, and so they tell people. But Aaron gets like a hole blown in them, and then they like cauterize his wound.
Yeah.
And then they go to like a doctor.
A local town doctor, yeah.
Local town doctor, and the doctor like does something.
Yep.
And then they're ready to go the next day.
Yeah, and then he's good.
Keep in mind, also, while they're getting Aaron to the doctor, they like they take a spill over the his like intestines are like sloshing around for sure.
Oh yeah.
But he makes it.
Yeah, he makes it.
Great doctor.
Yeah, great doctor. Then they do a bunch of other bullshit, and then they go fight another Reaper.
Yeah.
Well,
hang on, before we get to the other Reaper, unless you have a thematic connection.
No. Let's talk about some of the in between bullshit before we get to the other Reaper.
So this is sticking with the idea that the Vanguard are not very good at their jobs.
Yep.
Just in general.
Yep.
Because they also put Rohan in charge of this like guardian mission where the person he's guarding gets assassinated.
Yeah.
And also like one of their group gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because Rohan like took them down this one alley and they like got attacked.
Yeah.
And he's beating himself up over it. And they're kind of like, you know, we all make mistakes. You got to learn from it. And because you made this mistake and you're hopefully going to learn from it, like you won't make the mistake in the future, which, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
sure. You can't make mistakes on this job. Like, I'm sorry, you get one chance. Okay. Like, if you're the vanguard,
yeah,
and the very important, it's like a duke or something.
Yeah.
Like, if you put, like, a new recruit in charge of protecting a duke, and then the duke gets assassinated, sorry, like, for one thing, that guy is out of a job. He can't be a vanguard anymore. And also, like, I'm not going to hire vanguards anymore, right? It's not just like, oh, I made a mistake, I'll fix it.
Yeah, yeah. Especially, Luke, I think a great analog here is a medical doctor, right? Like,
yeah,
with these vanguards, they started in their undergrad institutions. They, you know, one of them was in the frigid north, but they all finished their undergrad. They applied for med school. It's a very select process. Only a few get in. And then you go through a very strict, like, basically apprenticeship, where you always have an older, experienced guy with you for like years while you're learning how to do the job good.
Right.
Because the success is so important. Like, failure is a really, really bad outcome. And so you have to have a lot of oversight and a lot of guidance with an experienced person to make sure that things are going okay.
Yeah.
Are there only two of them?
I don't know. I don't get it. It's not just I don't know. And then they go to this like ball thing.
Yeah.
And they have this plan to threaten this one guy.
Yeah.
And they take for some reason they take Redlin. And Redlin like thinks that he has lines in here.
I know, Redlin's
like, shut up, Redlin. You're not in this. And they like threaten this dude, and he's like, yeah, I knew you were gonna threaten me, so I like have my dudes too.
He's
so
like, come on, boys.
Threaten you back and then leave. It's like, that was the most incompetent thing I've ever seen. And then moments later, Redlin and his buddy get in a fight in the middle of the party.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Vanguard reputation in the toilet.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. But they can do magic, Luke. So.
Right.
I think that helps a little bit. Helps it go down a little easier, you know?
Yeah. And Asher is totally... Asher, who just has infinite amount of time to just like hang out with Redlin, is like one of the most powerful people in the nation.
Yeah.
So
anyway, they're really cool and Redlin's really cool. So Ger showed up again.
Yeah, good call.
Which we knew he had to come back.
Right.
And my guy, you're trying to be famous. Gare, who was like the worst of you all, read one book and is suddenly a super powerful warrior. Gotta get that book, Redlin. Come on, we know Redlin.
Give me that book.
We know Redlin's gonna find that book somewhere.
Yes,
because these are like highly trained folks. Gare,
well
okay, they are vanguards, but Gare was like the bottom of the class. Gare was bad, not a good fighter. He was not gonna like make it on his merits. Reads one book, suddenly he's taking on like five of them.
He does have the extra power as a Reaper,
right? But he's also fighting people who've already demonstrated success taking down a different Reaper.
True.
So yes. Like, yeah, I get that he's got more power. Also, though, like, he's able to harness that power. He didn't get trained on shattering.
True. Oh, this is true. I forgot about that.
So he's able to both harness this power and employ it to great effect reading one book.
Right.
Fuck, that's a good book.
It's a good book.
Either that or... He was actually a stellar student. And this is one of the ways that Redlin is trying to portray him as like deserving, a little deserving of his fate that he got.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He was a stellar student, but like kind of a dweeb. So
he was kind of a nerd.
He's lame. So had to be bullied.
He kind of deserved the bullying and exiling that he got.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good book. Wait, so did Gare steal the book? Was Redland correct?
I don't know, because I think he...
I feel like no.
I don't think he was, but he did end up with the book.
Yeah.
Which then poses an interesting question, Luke. How did he end up with the book?
I don't know. Who stole the book? Alessandra?
Maybe or something? Maybe the book had a mind of its own.
Could
maybe
be.
It's like that Raven okay. book from the Raven Scholar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It does have Raven in the title, so.
That's probably up.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. Luke, should we move on to reviews? Do you have anything else?
No, I'm ready.
Okay. I'm going to start. And the way I want to talk about our reviews is I want to talk about hopes for the next book, because the next book is coming out in like a month.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know if I'm going to pick up the next book, because the vibe of Redland's character, not for me.
Yeah.
I'm not vibing with Redland as a guy. I don't think he is cool in any real way. I don't think there's any cool parts about Redland.
Yeah.
But what would be interesting in the sequel, and I'm curious if this happens in the sequel, I would be curious to hear if it happens, is if there is this turn that we've been talking about the whole time, of where the story that Redland is telling is wrong in a really major way. It's not just that he is a villain, but that he is like lying, and there's a cool twist that's going to happen with this story that he's telling. And it takes a turn that makes him either actually really a villain, or explains a lot of this weird bullshit that's going on in the story.
Yeah.
Barring that, this isn't for me.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in the same position. So I think there's enough in here to say that Redland is kind of like embellishing a lot of things in this story.
Yeah.
And presenting it in a way that he views as more favorable to him, or just like differently than what actually happens. So I agree with you that I think what would be really good is if there is that payoff of like, we find that some of the story is differently than how he's presenting it, and if that like plays a role. I think the tough thing about this book for me, because I agree with you that like, I think this book has like the story has promise, and it's just like not for me as well, is because as we discussed, Redland is definitely presented as a villain, but I think is like to some degree like presented as like an interesting or at least intriguing character. Even if, I don't think anyone's would necessarily be, well, maybe people would root for Redland, but I wouldn't.
Right.
And that's, I think this comes down to a personality thing of like you said, Redland to me also doesn't really have any redeemable traits. And so it's hard. It's kind of just hard to listen to a main character that you just like don't like, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter how well, like if the book is written really well or like the story is interesting, the things that Redland presents as cool, I don't think is makes him seem cool. And so like, I can't, it's hard to read a book where you're not rooting for the character.
Right.
I think.
Right. I think that actually, as we've talked about this, I think a really interesting comparison is a Glockta comparison. And of course, I'm going to bring it back to Glockta, one of my favorite characters we've read of all time. But I think George R. R. Martin does this really well as well, where like you get perspectives of villains in these stories. Like these are not good people, but there are still like some parts of them that at least I connect with, that I'm like, oh yeah, most of what you're doing is heinous shit, But some of this is like really gives some like real interesting dimension to your character that's more than just like a megalomaniac or somebody who's driven by revenge, or like there's like some real meat in it that I think catches me, that Redlin hasn't, at least for me, given me any meat for why I like want to hear more from him. Anyway, so I don't anticipate, unless listeners, if you read the second book when it comes out in a month and you're like, there's an amazing twist, you guys have to read this, I might check out the second one. But as of this point, I don't think I'm going to be giving the second one a read. But if you vibed with Redlin, second book's coming out in like a month. Check it out. You can pre-order now on Amazon.
There you go. Okay.
Luke, let's talk about the summer. We're heading into the summer.
Yes. Everybody knows we got to have themed summers. Okay, so let's first say getting into the summer, a little bit of a break coming up for us.
Dan's traveling. Dan's going to be out of the country for about 3 weeks.
Yeah. Very exciting. Happy for you.
Very exciting. Thank
Italy?
You.
Is that right?
Scotland, Italy. Going to have a great time.
Scotland and Italy. Okay.
Interesting combo.
Right next to each other. Yep. Everybody knows.
Neighbors.
So we're going to be gone for about 3 weeks. But that plays into somewhat our theme for the summer, which we didn't come up with a catchy name for it.
The name is The Saga Continues? Question mark.
Okay, yes, I like that name. The description of what that means is that we're going to be reading the next book in a lot of unfinished... We're going to be reading the next book in a lot of unfinished series. And the like most recent book in a lot of unfinished series. Famously unfinished series.
So we've got some obvious examples here. The first, Luke, that we're going to start with, we've been referencing it quite a bit in these episodes because of how much inspiration seems to be drawn. We're going to be going back to Quoth and reading The Wise Man's Fear.
It's been a long time coming. I think we read the first one like 5, maybe 6 years ago.
It's probably around that. Yeah, it's probably around that, Luke. I don't want to go back and look because it's been a long time.
And even then, it was like kind of a joke that the third book hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
But so we're going to be reading, The Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss next. That's book two of a trilogy? Question mark.
That's right. The Kingkiller Chronicle.
Yes.
Ooh, hold on. Are we doing thirds for that, Luke?
I feel like we do fourths.
Okay. So this is a long one. So we're going to split it into quarters for this book. So we'll do the first quarter when we come back off our break, which we'll say the specific day in a minute. But we got to finish with our themes.
And it's been... And like we said, it's been a long time, so this break gives you a chance to catch up on Name of the Wind if you need.
The other book. I mean, it's probably the most famous example of this, Luke. And we have been slowly making our way through A Song of Ice and Fire for almost the entirety of this podcast. This podcast has been going for 8 years. We have read...
Oh, has it been that long?
It's been that. Terrifying. We started in 2018, Luke, and we have read about a book a year. About a book a year and a half. And we have now reached A Dance with Dragons.
Yes. George R. R. Martin.
George R. R. Martin, A Dance with Dragons. So that's our other book that we are looking at for... the summer.
He's been waiting for us to catch up, I think. So this will really be instigating book six to come out. But book six has not come out yet. So book five for us.
Right. And then we've got some ideas for the last book for our saga continues. Yeah. We're still deciding between a few books. If y'all have a suggestion, if there's a book you guys think we should tackle... that we don't know about, one that is in an unfinished saga, famously unfinished, and we're talking like more than 4 years, gap. Preferably right. more than like 10 years gap from when the last book came out. Hit us up on the Discord. Or if you just want to like talk about book series that are not finished and don't seem to have much hope of being finished, we're happy to talk about those on the Discord as well.
Yeah.
So I'm
excited.
I'm excited too, Luke. We're gonna finally see what's going on in these series. We're gonna see how far we've come. We will be returning on the 18th of June.
Yes.
We'll be returning on the 18th with the first quarter of The Wise Man's Fear. So enjoy that. We'll see you in a few weeks. Be bringing the hot takes.
And being dumb nerds.